How do I stop a bad communication spiral?
What's up, you guys? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast. I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler. We're brothers.
We're therapists.
We're not afraid of your questions.
So bring it.
Good question, Tyler. Before we answer that question, we got a quick review. And it says, no one ever talks about betrayal trauma like Brandon and Tyler do. I'm so relieved to listen and be able to tell myself that everything I was going through is relatable. I never knew there was such a thing. Thank you. So
awesome.
They speak specifically about betrayal trauma, which we do know a lot about, Tyler.
So. Yeah, we spend a lot of time in that realm working on betrayal trauma and appreciate the reviews there. It's nice to know that what we're doing here is making a difference and that it's helping. We're glad for your reviews. Brandon, I just wanted to say that I'm impressed with you showing up today for our listeners. Brandon just told me yesterday that he's got COVID and he's been sick. So he's powering through and doing extra duty right now, talking to the computer screen. And I'm glad you're here, man.
Yeah, thank you. It's thank goodness for Zoom, huh? We can do this, move forward. I really don't feel that bad. So I'm sitting at home all day doing nothing. So I might as well talk to you guys. So
yeah, well, good, man. It's I hope that you continue to have the light dose because, you know, a few weeks ago when I had it, I think I got the heavy dose and I don't wish that on my worst enemies.
I think it's the one genetic trait that I may have gotten better than you because I can beat COVID. Other than that, you know, you're taller, you're more athletic, smarter, you know, it's the one thing I might have gotten better.
you've got the COVID suppressant, and that might be the most important of them all. So yeah, well good, man. I'm glad you're here and I'm glad you're feeling okay. I hope it continues.
Thank you.
So well, I'm really excited, you guys, for our episode today. We have now made it official. We are reaching across the oceans and into the rest of the world. And we have a caller here from Sweden. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm in Sweden, but I'm Danish.
Okay. We've got a Danish caller who's in Sweden named Steen, who has been willing to come on and share with us some of her questions and some of her story. And I know that some of her questions are really going to resonate with a lot of our audience. So, Steen, thank you so much for your willingness to come on. We're really happy to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't you just jump in and kind of give us whatever background you feel comfortable with that you think will be helpful for us, and then just ask whatever your first question is, and we'll get going.
Yeah, I can totally agree that your program is really helping in regards to betrayal trauma. And that's a part of my question is under the betrayal trauma issues. My husband was had an affair and now I'm here. And we have a lot of issues because of it. We also had issues prior, but it just got magnified afterwards. Currently, I have chosen to end things, but I do want to be with him eventually. Right now, I just feel like he needs to do his part. I need to do my part before we can even.
So are you separated?
We live in different countries. So, yeah.
Oh, that would be great.
In many ways. Yeah. Yeah.
But there's still a lot of interaction with him. You're still that you would say there's still somewhat of a relationship there.
I would say I'm trying to just keep it like minimal because of the way it affects me and the trauma in me from being betrayed. Mm-hmm. Okay. So just so I can heal and move on and everything, I just try to keep it at minimum.
So the hope is, what you're describing is really pretty good. And let me tell you why, is when there's been betrayal trauma, you take a step back from the relationship. You do a lot of your own work. They do a lot of their own work. And the relationship, it puts the relationship kind of in this this weird place. It might work, it might not work. If both partners really do good work, it probably will. If just one partner does or just another partner does, then it probably won't. And so, but where you're at right now is just fine, is focus on you, focus on doing your work. It's hard for me to even say this, but almost let go of the marriage, let go of the relationship and focus on you. It's a good setting for healing on your own. So that sounds good.
I think it's good. Like we come from very different cultures. He's born and raised in Africa and I'm from Europe, and he has religion in his life. I don't. And I'm more of like, I'm studying to become a psychotherapist. So there's a completely different feel for me that he hasn't even stepped just one toe in it. Mm-hmm. So it's very different cultures and understanding of things and everything. So I am doing what you're saying, like just kind of try to let go. And my thought is more like, I have to fix my wounds. He has to fix his wounds. And then at the end, if we still want to be together, we can try again.
Yes. That's good.
That's excellent, yeah. Steen. Like something that we talk about a lot in our practices is that when there's been some betrayal, there's actually three recoveries that need to happen. And there's the his recovery and the her recovery. And if you get both partners doing their own recovery, the prognosis is usually pretty good that our recovery, the third recovery is our recovery, can happen. But that's a hard thing to do, especially when, you know, we have feelings wrapped up into it and we have a desire to ultimately kind of want to save the relationship, even though we don't have control over the outcome of whatever our partner's going to decide to do.
That's exactly it. Because like, I have knowledge, right? I know so many things, but because it's my heart, it's hard to separate it. And the effect is that we negatively affect each other. So that's also part of the reason why I just said, okay, let's separate and then see if we can come together. Because of course we had like our attachment wounds going into a thing. It's like, I'm more codependent and he's avoidant, and the classic push-pull and, you know.
Yeah. You would say you feed each other's attachment issues?
Yeah, indeed. Like I used to be way more like him, like from childhood trauma, I just went numb for many years. And the thing that pulled me out was meeting him. Like the storm I couldn't resist. Like it was, so for me, I don't have that. Like, what did I even do? Because I just felt like, oh, love came. And then I couldn't do anything but feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I find it more difficult to help him. Plus I get triggered every time he goes into his shut down numbness because of my need.
So the dynamic is he'll shut down and he's really good at shutting down.
Yes.
And you used to be like him, you say, but now you're kind of showing up the opposite of that.
Yeah, I feel like because if I was more avoidant prior and then I meet somebody, that makes me switch to more anxious. Mm. So that was like the shift for me. So I just went all anxious.
You feel like his avoidance triggers your anxious attachment?
Yeah, it does. Because I don't have it with anybody else but him. I have more avoidant tendency with everybody else.
Interesting.
So Steen, I'm wondering if we could just, I want to try to outline this pretty crystal clear so our listeners can understand it. If I'm hearing you right, this is something mm-hmm. that's really, really common in relationships where in some way or another, and in this case, there's betrayal involved. One of the partners will become what's called more anxiously attached, which means they're going to be worried and scared about losing the relationship. And they want to make sure that things get fixed and they want to pursue conversations and they want to have interactions. And then the other partner will be less anxiously attached and sometimes be what we would call avoidantly attached. And that's where they will almost withdraw and pull away and shut down. And you're describing that's your cycle when things get amped up or when you communicate with each other is that you pursue, you want to have some interaction. And in doing that, you kind of get amped up and it becomes angry and animated and almost like attacking. And the more that he shuts down, the more it amps you up. And then the more that amps you up, the more he shuts down. And eventually you're in this like sort of like cycle where it's like this figure eight that's going on where you're trying to approach connection. He's afraid because of whatever's going on under there. We'll need to talk about that in a second. So his response ends up being disappearing. And then the more he disappears, it goes down into the bottom of your cycle and you get more amped up and go, well, let's hurry and try to fix this again. So I'm going to pursue it more. And then it's like this kind of pushing you further and further apart instead of trying to reconcile things.
Basically, it just creates more damage.
One point I want to make before we really dive into this is just to reiterate that when there's attachment issues in a relationship, usually those attachment issues are there because of things that have happened long before the relationship even started. But when there's attachment issues, the relationship can be a source of healing. It can be a good place to feel security and safety, and you can process through things. Or the relationship can be a total source of just pain and exacerbate the attachment issues that you're already bringing to the relationship. So when betrayal happens, it's just throwing fuel on the fire. When that trust, the foundation is broken, if you're already, what you're describing is you're anxiously attached, and then he goes out and cheats on you, what do you know? That doesn't decrease the anxiety in you. It just
confirmed like my inner wound of feeling like I'm not worthy of love. I'm not worthy of being just chosen, right? So he goes out and does that. So I'm just left completely on the floor.
That's it. And so then what you'll do, and this is such a futile thing where you feel like you're not worthy of love from him. So where do you turn to feel worthy of love? To him, right? And then when you turn to him to feel like I'm lovable, I'm okay, and it triggers his shame and says, I'm a bad guy because you're unhappy, so I'm gonna shut down. It then makes you feel like, and this is that figure eight that Tyler's talking about. That on and on cycle that won't stop until you get so fed up with the relationship and so frustrated that you'll start to resent each other, disconnect, hate each other even, because you're just trying to do this song and dance. It's not working. There are answers to this. You don't have to stay in this figure eight. Tyler has all the answers.
Well, we could talk about some of them. I guess, Steen, now that we've kind of outlined the cycle, do you have a specific question or two about the cycle that you wanted to ask today?
Well, first question is kind of like, how do you get out of that spiral? And the second part is for me as a partner, could also be for the person who's numbing, like how to get out of that pattern, because it is a pattern. But what do you do? Like, is it meditation? What do you do to get out of it? Tools.
Okay, excellent. So let's talk about how to break the cycle for a minute. And in order to do that, I want to spend a little bit of time on the part that doesn't ever really actually get addressed between partners when this cycle is alive. And Brandon just touched on it, and it's that, and you just did a beautiful job of describing it. I don't feel worthy of love. And then when my partner went and did those things, it confirmed that I'm not worthy of love. And so it opens up not just the attachment wound, but the attachment wound is based in shame. And shame is this belief that there's something flawed or wrong with me. And so that's vulnerable. That's scary. Like that's probably our biggest fear as human beings, is that there's something about us that's going to get rejected. And so we're stuck now because we really, really want confirmation and connection, especially with the very person that's hurt us, because they mean a lot to us because they're our partner, but we don't know how to approach them from a vulnerable place. And so what happens is the scared, shameful part, that's the core emotion. It turns into a secondary emotion that's something more like anger, frustration, or irritation. And then the irritation, the frustration goes across to my partner. And that's the communication that I'm sending even though my heart's saying, please see me, please tell me that you love me, please tell me that you're still here for me. But it comes across as, I can't believe you did that, or you're the biggest dirtball in the world, or, oh my gosh, like, how immature are you? Like, but, and when we say those things, we think we're saying, please see me, I'm hurting so bad. But what our partner hears is, I suck, I'm no good, like, I'll never get anything right. And so that core emotion on his side is the exact same core emotion that you're feeling, which is shame. And yet he can't show that vulnerable part of himself, that shameful part of himself. And so it turns into a secondary emotion, which in his case, it sounds like he becomes cold and apathetic and pretends like it doesn't matter to him, or he just disappears and shrinks away. And in doing that, he thinks he's in some ways protecting you, because now he's not going to get in your way anymore because he's such a failure, or he's trying to tell you that he's frustrated and doesn't know how to fix it. But he doesn't say those words because he can't be vulnerable. And so what you end up with is two people who are operating from shame, who can't be vulnerable, who are basically saying to each other without ever saying the words, please see me. Like, please see how bad I'm hurting. And yet neither one of us is willing to go to that more vulnerable place where we could actually speak those words. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. Completely makes sense. There is just that little, like, for me, it feels like he just, like, it turns off. Even when I ask him what's going on, he says there's nothing. It's blank. Right. Like nothing, no thought, no feeling, no nothing.
Right. And there could be a couple of things going on there. I believe that that's probably partly his response to the shame I was talking about. The other thing that could be going on there is that when you haven't spent a lot of time coping with or identifying or speaking your emotions, you end up with a condition that's called alexithymia, which is an overall blunting of emotions and the inability to process and identify those emotions. And so there's a very real possibility that you might be dealing with some of both of those things, where you could ask him, you know, if I go home from work today and my wife says, how was work? And I'm like, fine. And she's like, well, tell me about it. And I'm like, it was fine. And she's like, well, what did you feel today? And I felt good. Like, well, because I'm so used to doing that day in and day out, she's looking for, I feel elated. I think I helped this client today. And then I felt disappointed in this other client because this and this, and she wants all that connection. And I'm so out of touch with speaking emotion that it's going to take some exercise to learn how to identify and process and speak emotion again. And that would be some of the his work in you guys' equation of the his, hers, and ours.
But Steen, I want to ask you, so like before we go to alexithymia, is he an emotional guy? Like, does he have emotion?
Well, he says that, he says, like, when I first met him, he said, I used to be a very sensitive guy, but his ex before me cheated on him. And then he said, so I chose to turn it off.
Yeah. So what he's saying right there is, I have emotions, but I've learned how to
shut them off to
avoid feeling them. So,
yeah. But I feel like in general, I don't know what's, there's something like his reactions, like when his dad passed, it took 3 years before he showed any emotion. So there's a trauma happening there, and I don't know how it's like still affecting him, or, but it seems like sometimes from the event to reaction, it's
so
long reaction phase.
He's gotten really, really good at a defense mechanism. And like really good. And to the point where
too good.
It's probably hard for you to even comprehend or understand, like, what, how are you so blank?
Mm-hmm.
And you've gotten really good at a defense mechanism of amping up, right? Of going, but I think the important thing is to really look at it for what it is, as that defense mechanism. And what are you trying to defend against? And both you and your husband are trying to get something from each other that the other person can't give. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so frustrating is when you say, I'm not worthy of love, like deep down, I don't feel worthy of love. If your husband can't give you that answer, you'd think that your spouse should be able to, right? Your spouse should tell you, hey, I love you.
Yeah.
But it's not about whether he loves you or not. It's about whether you're worthy of love. He can say, I love you, and you still might feel unworthy of love. Mm. If you can't get that from your spouse, then where can you answer that question?
I know that I have to find it within, right? I know that.
Yeah. But how?
Yeah, that's my journey right now, right?
This is the deep down journey, right?
Yeah.
The bigger here. If he knew 100% totally that he was worthy of love, that despite all of his mistakes, despite all of the trauma that he'd been through, that, mm-hmm. you know, I am loved. I am good and I'm loved. Then let's say you came at him and you said, hey, I want to talk and I want to, he would totally be able to tolerate that and hold space for you and empathize with you, because he wouldn't be so triggered and he wouldn't be so triggered by you that he'd have mm-hmm. to shut down. He actually lacks boundaries with you.
Mm-hmm.
In that when you come at him with an emotion, he is so gonna take him on so much, he doesn't even want to go there. Right. But if you knew that you were worthy of love and you had that answer and you went to him and he shut down, what would that do if you already knew that? How could you respond, or how would you respond?
I would say on a good day, I think I would be able to look at him more like, I work with kids, so I would be able to look at him more with that open compassion
that I love
do at work.
Yes.
On a bad day.
On a bad day, you take it personally, right?
No, I think on a bad day, I would be like going back in the patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
You'd be fighting for that connection.
Yes, my little girl would just be, love me.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It would be that woundedness that would be driving again, instead of that place of confidence and knowing that you are worthy of love. And listen to how the pattern shifts, Steen. If what Brandon's saying is true, is that you approach your husband on a good day, let's say on a good day, you mm-hmm. now see him as a wounded child with compassionate eyes. You still have things you need to speak. You still have things you need to share. You still have got feelings that are going on, but you're now looking at him from the perspective of this kind of like wounded child. You can see his shame. What would your response look and sound like operating from that place of compassion and understanding, even though you have things you need to share?
That's a big question. I think the skill I'm not able to get to right now because of my reactions and my emotions is that I don't see him. Like, I don't notice what he's doing. I don't notice when he's off or when he's going in his pattern. But if I did not take his reaction personally and would be able to keep that level head, I think I would be able to notice these things in him. So when he starts, like, he has this thing, he has, like, it's almost sounds like a burp or something. I know when he does that, he's gone. Like, mm-hmm. so stuff like that, when I'm not being reactive, I would be able to notice and, like, maybe take a timeout or I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. I love that, because what you're seeing now is that you're starting to tap yourself into, and this sounds crazy because you're the betrayed one, but you're tapping yourself into a little tiny piece of empathy and understanding, which is more often more likely going to yield a better result than staying in the dramatic place where the autopilot wants to go. And so you can step in now and you can operate from a place of saying, I see you. And then in the form of saying, I see you, you can then also say, and I need to talk with you, mm-hmm. you know, and I'll give you an example. Like my wife and I have been in this pattern in the past, and I was the disappear guy. I was the guy who she'd say something like, Tyler, I can't believe you're not listening right now or something. And then I'd go into like, oh, I know, I'm terrible, I suck. And I'd start to shut down and my body language would start to shrink and I'd start to pull away. And she would usually either want to pursue it and want to fight. And even sometimes she'd even just say, I just want to fight with you right now, which what she was really saying was, I just need you to see me right now.
Mm-hmm.
But what she learned to do over time was she learned to see that when I was in my bad day and she happened to be on her good day, she could say, hey, Tyler, I can see that you're feeling a ton of shame right now. And I don't need you to disappear. I believe you're capable of hearing me. And if you can sit and listen for a second, that would be really great. And if not, I guess we're done, you know, and just saying that, it was almost like a call back to action to me to say, oh, she did see that I'm in shame here. And she saw that I'm struggling, but she also opened the door for me to step back in and give it a shot. And, and so that compassionate mindset allows for a more gentle invitation to participate in the conversation rather than the angry, you always do this, or you always shut down, or you're never there for me, or you're not available, or you don't care about me. And you can hear the difference in the approach. Now, does it mean he'll come to the table? No, like not necessarily, but it's going to be more effective at having a better shot at it. And you're going to be able to walk away from that conversation feeling more intact about yourself and your own values, knowing you didn't go and say things that you'll regret later or that aren't part of like your value system or your personality.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense, because I know for him, a part of his shutdown is also fear-based. Like, he's afraid, what will I say? When will he start feeling like the worst person on the earth? And when will things escalate? Like, he goes in expecting everything to be bad, because it's usually that's how it ends. But I can see him, like, he's just so afraid in the moment.
Steen, how does a soft approach work with him? Like when your heart's not at war, when you're not anxious and not grabbed, and you do show up compassionate, and I mean, you're honest, you're wanting to communicate with him. Does that can it kind of break the shutdown?
Rarely. Like, I would say before, like, we met and then his life started going down. Like, he had a lot of like things you don't want to fuck up in. Right. He made those choices and then he cheated and, you know, completely just, I think he's like at rock bottom of shame of why am I doing all these things? So it's that level of disconnection and just trying to, like, he says he feels dead inside.
Is he doing work? Is he willing to actually do his own work?
It's been taking a long time for me to even get him to be open, right? So now he's more open, but I think it's like the struggle between, it seems hopeless. What I know, my culture says, go pray. I see this is working just a little bit, but it's also scary, right?
Mm-hmm.
The courage to go into your shame and the fear and everything. It's, you really need to be having some big balls to do that.
Right.
But
you feel like he doesn't have those.
I think he will, but he doesn't believe he has. Like, he doesn't believe he can do it, right? I believe he can do it. But I don't believe, like, if I'm at him like a bulldozer, angry, there's no way he's going to find that courage.
So you're seeing the potential, but you're not seeing the desire, or maybe the desire, but not
fear of failure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the reason why I'm asking this stuff is, you know, we're talking to you today. We're not talking to him. And so there's certain things that are in your control. And there's a space in relationships that's very uncomfortable and very trying and very teaching to all of us. And it's this really uncomfortable space where, you know, we're interacting with our partner, our attachment issues are coming up. And in that moment, we know that our partner sucks. We know that they have problems. We know they're not showing up healthy. We know that if they would only, right, if they would only communicate, if they don't, then we could all be so much happier.
Yeah.
But here's that space is, even though we know that, we can't control them.
Mm-hmm.
And what we can do is turn and look at us and say, okay, right now in this moment, them shutting down or them amping up or them doing whatever, it's triggering something inside of me. What is it about me? What's my fear? Why is this pushing me so hard? And it gives you a great opportunity to self-reflect on a level that you don't get to unless you're in a relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And so his major shutdown, I don't think anybody would like to be in a relationship with someone like that, Steen.
No.
But, and it would trigger most people, but it's really triggering you, and it's triggering some things in you that you can look at and say, man, like, why am I so scared of abandonment? Where is that coming from? Now, here's the other thing. And this is why I was asking you about his willingness. You've got to really look at this and say, how long am I going to stay engaged and hope for reconciliation and the relationship to be good? And at what point am I going to be honest and boundaried about this relationship really not working for me? Your anxious attachment will say, oh, don't you dare go have boundaries that push away from him even further. But your gut, your intuition might be saying, you know what, Steen, that's what you need to do to have compassion for yourself and to love yourself. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which can be really, really hard, really, really difficult. But his unhealthiness is unhealthy. And it's also providing you an opportunity, a real big opportunity for some pretty strenuous growth at the same time. So,
yeah, I would say he, like, this was my, I pushed him, like, I put an ultimatum on him to do a course with a fair recovery. And then I chose to leave. And I expected him to bail out, because that's not in his, what he wants to do is not to do a course where he feels ashamed every week on the meeting and everything. But he actually finished it. So I was like surprised that he told me recently, yeah, I finished it. And it was 17 weeks, right?
See, there's some desire from him.
Yeah, but also like I noticed that I had to stop that, you know, controlling part of me, like sending links, doing all that part, just to push him, because I never got my expectations met. So I just kept hitting this wall that I was creating, right? I was like, okay, yes. I have to like let go. No talking, no nothing. And I told him, I am healing and I love you, but I'm not going to wait forever. So in my healing, if you take too long, I'm gone. That's going to be the end result.
How long's too long?
I don't know. We'll see.
So, and the reason I ask that is because I see this question all the time. And a lot of times it's not about, hey, here's the mountain you climb. And once you're on that mountain, then like, hey, we're good. It's you'll look at him and you'll see progression or not, or regression or stagnation. Yeah. And as long as you see certain progression, then you can hang in there. If not, then you'll know, hey, I'm going to get the same thing out of this relationship that I've always gotten because nothing's changing. Right?
Yeah.
And to that point, Brannon, I just want to add a little bit more on that, that, you know, and I love what you're saying, Steen, because I actually believe this is true, that you put your effort into you doing your own healing, coming to your own understanding of your own lovability. And what that does is it takes the pressure off in a sense for him to have to perform into like loving you. And it opens up a space where he can choose to do that if he's going to choose it. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, you're growing into the place where you're going to grow into strength and clarity and understanding. And the partners that I work with who are in your similar situation, if they do that work, there isn't a time frame. They do that work and they either see the effort happening on the other side or they don't. And eventually they grow into a space that I call their surrender moment. And they have this, instead of like fear and doubt, it's this clarity and peace, even though they know it's going to be difficult. And they go, oh, yep, I'm probably not ever going to get what I was looking for in this relationship. And it's probably time for me to make some other decisions. But it'll come, because of the work that's been done on your side, because of the opportunity, this is, sounds crazy, but because of the opportunity that your husband is presenting you by rejecting you, mm-hmm. you get to look at yourself, you get to grow, and you'll grow into a place where you can then say, yeah, it's either I'm in a good enough space that I can stay and I can tolerate not being connected to, or I'm in a good enough place that it's time to move on and I can see it clearly, but now I can make my decisions with, you know, a more clear, peaceful heart instead of this fearful, anxious, scared thing that's going on.
Yeah, for me, like, we're waiting for like residency issues. So he might come this year. And a part of me is fearing that if he comes here and he's going to live here in my apartment, right, will everything just go back? Because I feel like the way I got so destroyed from being betrayed, I've gained so much like wisdom, awareness. Like I'm kind of grateful though, because like I, how many years could I have been living in this pattern of just, yeah. So it's I'm grateful that it happened, even though it's been the worst pain I ever felt. But what happens if he comes back? If I'm not prepared, like if I'm not healed, if I haven't started to love myself more, what happens when he comes back?
Yes.
That's a fear.
Dean, I hear your fear and I'm glad that you're thinking that actually. But I'm gonna maybe go into fix it mode a little bit and tell you that's not gonna happen with you, because here you are talking to us on our podcast. You listen to the podcast, you're studying therapy, you're self-reflective. You're hopefully you don't let him and that relationship wipe all of that out of you. And mm-hmm. you continue on this path of, I'm going to almost demand healing for myself and for our relationship. And so I just want to say one thing. I think we've kind of maybe not addressed enough today, which is there are so many people in relationships with people who have avoidant attachment. And what I mean by that is, for those of you that don't know, it's somebody who shuts down and somebody who is emotionally disconnected and just you can't connect to them on an emotional level. And I was talking to a wife of a mortician once, and the mortician was like, I don't have any emotions. I'm so good at my job because I don't have emotions. And she looks at me and she says, and that's why I'm completely lonely all the time in our relationship. I just want to say, if you're in a relationship like that, you are not alone. And I think the loneliness, the pain, those emotions that you feel when you feel so disconnected from your partner like that can be so intense and so hard. And I just want to validate that and tell you, Steen, it's okay mm-hmm. that you're feeling those emotions, that sadness and that loneliness and that want for connection, but that frustration that you can't. Now, me and Tyler have jumped to, there's a lot you can do about you. You can focus mm-hmm. on you. Let's jump to your deeper wounds. Let's work with your shame and your trauma. All that's great. And it sucks to be in a relationship where you're getting abandoned and rejected all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So I just want you to know that we get that, right? I'm speaking for you, Tyler, too.
Yeah, thanks. I would echo those sentiments, Brannon and Steen. I want to echo what Brannon has said, that there's no doubt in my mind that, yeah, if he comes back and you end up being in the same home again, you're going to notice, and you're going to either notice when you're in a good day, like you talked about, good days and bad days. In the good days, you'll lean in further, and in the bad days, you'll take more space, and you'll continue to work your own process and your own patterns. And if it's too overwhelming, then you're going to probably need to move out until you can lean yourself back in. And then to what Brannon was saying as well, I just want to, for the listeners who are out there going like, well, what if I'm the avoidant? Am I like a terrible person? Like, no, you're not. Like, I get it. You're fearful. You probably feel like you don't have the skill set to lean in and know how to connect. You probably are afraid of being seen and ultimately rejected as well. And so we're talking, you know, to Steen today about, okay, you can slow down and kind of look inward and take care of yourself. If you're one of the avoiders, the courage part of this is to learn how to turn around and face your partner and lean yourself back in, knowing that there's some risk and vulnerability there. But that's the work. That's the work you have in front of you. So Steen, I don't even know what your husband's name is, Steen. What's his, I know you don't need to say his name, but if you're listening, that's the work. Keep stretching yourself, keep leaning in, keep doing your best and being willing to fail at it a little bit, because your partner's ultimately gonna just wants to see the effort, just wants to see that you matter, that they matter. And putting that effort in is one way to do that. And
but on the other side of it, on like, so his work is to actually turn around and step in and be vulnerable. And her work, the anxious attachment, is to back out of that limbic response, slow things down a little bit, have some compassion, and learn how to communicate effectively with a soft approach, with love, right?
Right.
And not desperately, not, you know, trying to grab for that. And if each one of you shift in those two ways, then Tyler, what's going to happen?
Well, ultimately, it's going to feel safer for both. There's going to be drops of trust that get put in. The practice will be pretty awkward, but it'll be good. And eventually, you're going to have trust, which will lead to the ability to be more and more vulnerable with each other. And that vulnerability is where the deepest forms of connection come into relationships. And that's how it works. So that's why there's work on both sides of this. I know we're running a little bit short on time, but I wanted to just share a couple of other things about how you might approach an avoider. A lot of times avoiders, not just because of their own shame, just also because of communication styles, they handle communication better in different forms. And so, you know, if I'm approaching my partner head on, like I think you called it a bulldozer, and I'm like, we're going to talk and you're going to love me. It's like, you just like go right over the top of him. Like that's probably not going to work really well. But if you understand how to deal with an avoider, what you do is you come up alongside of them and you sort of, you validate that you see them, and then you get them, when you talk to them, literally position yourself sideways instead of head on. And when you go to have discussions, go for a walk or a drive or something and have some movement going, because that movement in and of itself will help with the engagement. And so when the shutdown happens, everything shuts down, the body shuts down, everything freezes. And so if you can keep things moving, sometimes that's another way to help open up the chance at a better experience, walking side by side and moving.
So I understand that as maybe creating the space for short mental breaks. Like for, if we go for walk, for me, it when I feel fired up, I can maybe look at a tree and calm down. And when he starts to freeze up, you can look in a tree and open up again, maybe.
Yeah,
sure. Absolutely. And there's that opportunity to when you, like the example I'm giving is you're exactly right. You have a chance to slow things down so that the drama doesn't stay so amped up.
Steen, are you going to therapy? Do you have a therapist?
In between, I'm looking for one that had trauma experience.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I like that. So, when we talk about your interactions with your husband, there's triggers that come, and certain triggers, they come from places from long ago, or they come from the betrayal trauma. And to desensitize those triggers will help you to stay in the right part of your brain so that you can, because the anxious attachment will be an automatic response. It'll be unconscious at times. And if you go, like, I really, really would recommend that you, while you have this space from him, focus on doing some of your trauma work, and not only childhood trauma, but do some trauma work around the betrayal trauma, so that when he says something or when he gives you a look or shuts down in a certain way, you don't go off the rails. You'll be able to be okay because you've desensitized that trauma and it won't trigger as much shame. So,
yeah,
Brandon, Brandon, when you say do the trauma work, I'm assuming that you're saying with the therapist, whatever a trauma therapist would do, but something like EMDR would be maybe really beneficial for even prepping for having her husband come home.
Yeah. So there's EMDR, which I talk about all the time. There's also parts work. It's internal family systems. So, and if you don't know what that is, you can Google it. You can look it up.
But I know what it is.
It's getting to know yourself on a level where it's like, oh, that's that part of me that wants to rage and just go. And I love that part of me. Thank you. But no, thank you. I'm going to bring out the compassionate part right now. That's a bit softer and kinder. And both parts are okay. So that would be really helpful for you to be that conscious and that aware of yourself so that you can regulate your emotions and show up effectively with him. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do some trauma work, Steen. It'll be good. For you. Good for everyone. Everyone needs to do it. I believe. So.
Steen, we are so grateful that you're willing to come on. Hopefully this conversation has been beneficial for you. I know that this topic that we're talking about is so common with so many of our listeners. And so you having the courage to come forward and share yourself the way you did, I know it's going to have an impact for good on other people. And
I got to say, your English is incredible. I don't know.
Thank you.
Yeah, so good. Like you understand everything we say. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. It's been really good. And I wish we had like three more sessions with you to continue.
Well, you can, I'm always up if you want to invite me back.
That sounds awesome, Steen. We'll stay in contact with you. And if you need help, wherever you're living, I'm sure there's probably some really good in-person therapists, but if you need help finding somebody, both Brandon and I have capabilities and good therapists that you could also be working with online as well.
Okay, thank you.
You just might have to do your therapy in English.
That's fine. All the podcast is English, so it's fine.
Yeah. All right. Well, for those of our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, if it resonated for you, please like, share, subscribe. That's how we're able to grow. We hit our goal. I just want to share with you guys who are listening. We hit our goal this year. We were 12 short right at the end of the year. And I think we just barely hit our goal of the number of listeners. So thank you for your support. We appreciate all you're doing.
Awesome. Have a good day, guys. We'll see you.
Thank you.
Steen, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
We'll see you.